5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice in its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. The look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, see ya!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Century Idaho. Two trappers set out on a beaver hunt deep in the Bitterroot Mountains. The two men were warned not to go deep into this area. A year prior, another trapper's body had been found, ripped to pieces and half eaten. Rumors abound that the young trapper had been killed by a half man, half monkey type creature. A young frontiersman at the time, and the only survivor to the incident that took place, Bauman recounted his story to Teddy Roosevelt. Along a remote stretch of Montana's Wisdom River, the two men decide to set up camp. Both men briefly leave the camp to go set up traps for the night. Upon returning, their campsite is demolished. Everything has been gone through, and their lean-to had been torn down. As night fell, the two men were undaunted and began to set up their camp again. The men start to find human-like tracks all around their camp.
Look at these tracks.
Remembering the several warnings the men had received not to come into this area and the previous trapper that had been killed, the men begin to panic.
They look like the ape-man tracks.
Both men had decided to call it a night. Bauman was awakened by the sound of rustling and the foul stench of a wild beast. He immediately rose up and fired a shot. Both men then heard something tearing off through the woods. Bauman and his partner were unnerved by this and decided to abandon the camp at first light.
You go ahead and pack up, I'll go get the beaver traps.
Whatever was harassing these two men was still around. Bauman and his partner made the mistake of separating. Bauman headed down to the river to retrieve the beaver traps, while his companion said he would take the camp down and meet him downriver.
Jack, where are you at? I heard a commotion.
When Bauman arrived to the new campsite, he found his partner sprawled out on the ground with his neck snapped and a set of bite marks on his throat. He knew at once a menacing forest beast was responsible. At the horrific sight, Bauman took off running. As an old man, Bauman would recount the story of future President Teddy Roosevelt. Until Bauman's death, he would always say the wild man had killed his friend. Not an Indian, not a bear, but a wild man had killed his friend that day. President Roosevelt was so struck by the story, he wrote about it in his 1892 book, The Wilderness Hunter. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Hope you enjoyed the Bauman story. It's a tough story to tell because there's so many different moving parts to it, but there's a lot in that particular encounter and a lot of warnings in that particular encounter. Don't separate from the group. Don't go off, you know, stay together in a group. And I think that's really the moral to the whole story. People can say it was a shooting. They can say this or that, but I really think it's not separating when you're out there with people. But thanks for being here tonight, everyone. I really appreciate it. Got a great guest on for tonight. I'm going to be speaking with Brian. Brian had a very interesting encounter, very up close and personal type encounter when he was a child. Before we get to that, if you get a chance, please visit SasquatchChronicles.com for additional shows throughout the week. If you've had an encounter, email me, Wes@SasquatchChronicles.com. Well, I want to welcome Brian to the show. Brian, thanks for being here tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, Wes.
You had an encounter when you were a kid. You guys were off shooting fireworks and ran into one of these things. Tell us a little bit about the property. Had you guys had any other experiences prior to the sighting?
Well, I'm from Texas originally, and my mom is from Louisiana. So my grandmother still had property there, and we would go visit quite often on the weekends. And she had about 5 acres that was all piney woods out behind the house. And then the next door neighbors who had kids my age at the time, well, they were still my age, had about 10 to 15 acres that had a large pond on the property. And then it had out, you know, behind the property was all piney woods for miles and miles and miles. There was a train track that ran through behind the property heading north-south, and that got removed for some reason. And so you had a elevated flat space that you could walk on for miles. And this town was between what's called DeRidder, Louisiana, and Lake Charles. So, I mean, there was, you know, it's a little town, little yellow flashing light. It's a kid's paradise. You could shoot, you know, shotguns and target shoot and ride. You know, we had 3-wheelers at the back then, not 4-wheelers. Motorcycles. The kids next door had horses. We'd go ride horses.
Very, very rural setting.
Oh, yeah. You know, you get up in the morning, you go run around the woods all day, come back when the sun went down, basically.
Prior to this, did anyone in your family ever mention anything about these creatures or talk about anything weird going on around the property?
No. The only thing that was, and I don't remember if this, I think it was before, the only weird thing we ever witnessed was there was, and I can never remember the name of it, and it was only after I heard it on YouTube that it clicked to me that's what it was. Basically one night, the whole family was standing out behind the house listening to what sounded like the hyena type screaming.
I gotcha.
I think it was the Umatilla screamer is what the video is called. But, you know, and my grandmother said, oh, well, that's a cougar. You know, I was a little kid, so, okay. I guess that's a cougar. I mean, it didn't sound like a big cat to me, but.
Let me try to cue some of that up here for the audience. Here's a little bit of the Umatilla sounds.
January 21st, about 11 p.m. I'm a couple hundred feet from my house. You can hear it going off in the background right now. Kind of sounds weird. Kind of sounds doggish, hyena-ish, but you can hear it going off in the background right now. It's really kind of strange, just to say the least. It's been going off for about 15, 20 minutes so far by the fire station. And it's pretty crazy, so if you can listen, that'd be crazy. Hold on. I mean, that almost sounds like laughter. It's actually gotten closer since it started. It's probably only 200 feet, 300 feet from me right now. I don't know what it is or what that is going off right there. You can hear it.
When I very first heard that, there was, I thought, you know, that's strange. I don't know that I've heard that audio, that type of audio before. And what's strange is I couldn't place it with anything I had personally ever heard in the woods. And it wasn't until I saw a video from the early 90s about these kids that were out in the woods and they were actually out looking for Bigfoot. And this thing started going off like the Umatilla Screamer and it was coming at them. And it just freaked them out. And that's strange. So you heard that out there. You guys, the whole family had heard that.
Oh, yeah. It was me, you know, my brother and sister, my mom, my dad, my grandmother. And, you know, we listened to it for probably a good 10 minutes. I remember, you know, actually getting bored because, you know, you're a little, again, little kid. Yeah, that's cool. You know, oh, look, a bright, shiny object. Let's go play with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it was, you know, it was weird. And again, it was pawned off as a, oh, that's a cougar.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is Western Louisiana. I didn't really think there, you know, and again, nowadays, you know, looking at it through the eyes of an adult, there really weren't a lot of cougars around there, as far as I know.
Yeah, and that particular sound really isn't a sound that cougars make. You think your grandma, was it your grandma that said she thought it was a cougar?
No, it was my grandmother, and she flat out said that's what it was.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know, because we were all going, well, what is that? You know, my mom, what is that? And, you know, she just, oh, that's a cougar.
Yeah.
End of discussion.
So you guys were hearing strange things around the property, kind of like the Umatilla sounds. Can you walk us into your encounter? Kind of tell us what you were doing, who you were with, and walk us right into what happened.
Yeah. I'm already getting goosebumps just talking. I've told this story to 100 times. We were having the classic bottle rocket war, which is probably why they don't sell bottle rockets anymore.
I can't say I haven't done that myself.
Yeah. You know, we survived the 80s. How imagine. It was me and this kid named Philip, and he is about 11, 12. I was just about to turn 11. And my brother and his brother were on the other team. And we had been shooting, you know, these things at each other, and it was dark. It was full on nighttime. And it wasn't just the area around my grandparents and their neighbor's house. You know, other people were shooting off fireworks as well. And since it was a very rural area, you know, you were getting, people had some pretty good size, you know, professional grade fireworks.
Right.
The homemade. Possibly you could see it at a distance. But we had been going at it for a while, and Philip and I had decided we were going to try to sneak up behind, you know, and flank them, you know, my brother and his brother. So what we decided to do was run all the way to one end of the property, which has the pond on it. And then beyond the pond, on the far side of the pond, the ground slopes down to, I guess they call it a bottom. And it goes down a good, you know, 20, 30 feet at about a 45 degree angle. And then it flattens out and it's straight piney woods probably for about 2 miles. And so we run around back there and it is pitch black. I have a flashlight that's one of those old yellow, you know, 6-volt battery flashlights, a big square clunky thing, and a big bag of bottle rockets. We run around behind there. We go down to the bottom of the embankment, for lack of a better word. And we're not there just a couple seconds, and we're leaning against the embankment when we hear this heavy breathing coming from behind us. And if you've stood next to one of those gigantic Clydesdale horses, that's the volume of air that it sounded like. Plus, it kind of had a bit of a rasp to it, and it started walking towards us. And it, again, it's pitch black. All we can, you know, you might see like one tree and in front of you, and then it's pitch blackness, you know, beyond. And it's walking on two legs towards us. So, you know, I got the flashlight and I'm, you know, 10, 11 years old. I'm about 5 feet tall and I turn it on at chest level. And I'm staring into basically a hairy wall. And then, so I'm like, what the, you know, what is that? And then I follow the wall up. And then I am met with glowing yellow eyes. And that lasts for about a heartbeat before the hand comes up and blocks the eyes. And that's, it was like 3 heartbeats. Staring at a hairy wall, seeing the yellow glowing eyes, hand goes up, we turn around screaming like little girls, trying to claw our way up the embankment to get away. Drop the flashlight, we're tearing out of there screaming bloody murder. Everybody else, all the other kids start screaming because we, you know, come up the top of the pond and running down the side. And Philip's house, his dad's house, was closest, so he ran there. I ran to my grandparents' house, where my parents were, blabbering about a monster in the woods. You know, I mean, and of course, there's no monster out there. You know, you didn't see a monster. You saw something else. You saw a tree. You know, I mean, you didn't see a monster. And no, we saw a monster. You know, Philip can tell you we saw a monster. And, you know, his dad told him you didn't see no monsters. The next day we got back together. You know, I had also dropped my big bag of bottle rockets, and being 10 years old, I kind of wanted those back. So we got Philip's 12 gauge semi-automatic shotgun. I had a 16 gauge shotgun and he had his dad's .357, and we walked around to the top of the pond before it led down to the bottom where the, you know, the woods were, where we saw the thing, and stood there. Well, you know, there's the flashlight laying on the ground, and so it's like, you know, there's my bottle rockets laying on the ground, and it's kind of like, okay, go get them. no, you go get them kind of thing. You know, it's, you know, we stood there, we were all talking tough up until we got there. And then it's like, nah, it's okay. You know, I'll wait till somebody, you know, about 5 other people show up and then I'll go get them. The next night, Philip's dad, now these, you know, it's country setting, and, you know, he's got an area next to the house where they had built literally we called it the tree house, but it was basically a cabin on stilts, a one room square building on stilts that was about 12 feet off the ground. They had welded a metal ladder together to be able to get up to it. And we would, you know, play in that and, you know, slide down the ladder and all this other stuff. And the next night, Philip's dad woke up and saw what he called a man wearing a fur coat standing out by the treehouse. He opened the door and yelled at the man, and then when he did, the fur-coated, and this is July, fur-coated man ran off. But then he realized, and you know, he's telling us this later, he realized the guy's head was bumping up against the bottom of the treehouse. And the treehouse is 12 feet high. So that was the only, you know, two times that something like that happened. There was another time where the kids next door had a swimming pool when it was above ground, metal frame swimming pools. The mom told us if there's a coyote on the loose with rabies, and if something comes up and tries to get you, just stay in the middle of the pool and you'll be okay, and just yell for the house. Which, young kid logic, that sounds reasonable, but as an adult looking back, it's like, how's a coyote gonna, with rabies, A, getting into the swimming pool, B, and if we splashed water on it, it would probably run away to begin with. So, and she said that the men at, there's a gas line, like, station. There's like a big gas line running through this area, and that's where my grandfather worked. And kid's mom said, well, the minute the gas company said they had seen it walking around the gas company. I mean, that kind of didn't make, looking back, it kind of didn't make a lot of sense that, you know, there's a rabid coyote. Usually they don't live very long once they go rabid. But, you know, to warn us about it while we're playing in a swimming pool is, you know, a little unusual.
That is very unusual. You know, in that situation, you wouldn't think, like you said, with the coyotes, man, you just splash a little water and they're out of there. Whether it's rabid or not, it's going to take off. How old were you when all of this was going on?
I was about 10 to 11 years old. This all happened probably within a couple of years. And we would go there, you know, maybe, you know, twice a month on the weekends, you know, and then longer in the summertime, you know, to visit the grandparents. And this all happened right around 79, 80. And the only reason I'm positive it was 4th of July is because of the fireworks. And it was hot. If it was fireworks and cold, it would have been, you know, New Year's.
As you got older, did you ever get a chance to talk to your buddy Philip, his father, and talk to him about that man in the fur coat?
Yeah, we had talked about it. We didn't talk about it for the longest time. And it probably only took about, you know, I guess because we were kids, it only took about, you know, a couple of months before we, you know, stopped hanging around the house and started venturing off into the woods again. You know, Philip's dad was, well, just make sure you take a shotgun with you. I mean, whenever we would venture away from the house and went roaming in the woods, he always told us to make sure we took a shotgun with us. And it was loaded with double-aught buck. So, I mean, the size of this thing was pretty good. I mean, I felt like when I was looking up at it, it was, my head was all the way back. I'm looking up at a, you know, really very high thing. So,
did Philip's dad ever change his mind on it being a man in a fur coat?
He did, but he didn't. You know what I mean? He's one of those guys, you know, it wasn't a man in a fur coat, but he wasn't going to tell you it wasn't a man in a fur coat. He would just say, yeah, it was kind of weird. That was odd. Yeah, it looked like, he goes, yeah, it looked like a guy wearing a fur coat. But what was it? Well, it looked like a guy with a fur coat.
I gotcha. What's interesting about him saying that is I have had other witnesses on. I had a guy in Washington State one time, and he had seen a creature, and at first he thought it was a guy in a fur coat, until, kind of like your situation. The guy was huge, and it was out of proportion for a human, and it didn't make sense. It was in the middle of the summer, and it was quite a ways away, and the more he looked at it, the more he started to realize, holy crap, this isn't a guy in a fur coat. This is something else. You know, sometimes it's easier not to address things and just chalk it up to explaining it like a man in a fur coat, and yeah, that was weird. sometimes people do that for psychology and for their own mental well-being rather than address it as being something strange.
Oh, yeah. No, I know, no doubt. I mean, it took me, there was for the longest time I didn't talk about it. You know, one time when I got quite a bit older, I asked my mom, because then I started thinking, you know, did I actually see that? Did it actually happen? So I talked to my mom. I'm like, hey, do you remember, you know, when we were little, that 4th of July where we came running up saying there was a monster in the woods? And she was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. You guys thought you saw, you know, Bigfoot or something out in the woods. I had never used the word Bigfoot. But, you know, of course, yeah, here it is. It was probably later, like late 90s before, you know, when I asked her about it. And, of course, you know, by then Bigfoot's everywhere. But, you know, and when I was a kid, I never, you know, I'd seen, like, there was a couple movies that came out. And, of course, you know, the elementary school library had the monster books that, you know, had a picture of Patty on the cover, and I always thought they're up in Washington State, so I'm good. Yeah. You know, we're safe down
here. Godspeed, Washington State. We're good down here.
Yeah, good luck, good luck, folks, because we're down here in the South, you know, in West, in the Texas area, and we're good. But now, you know, with everything else going on these days, it's like, okay, Texas, kind of scary. Yeah. You know?
How far away from the creature do you think you were?
Wes, I think I was at least 10 feet.
Wow, so you were really close.
I think if I had waited to turn the flashlight on, I might have been closer. But yeah, when I hit the flashlight, it looked like I was standing in front of a dirty, shaggy brown carpet.
And that's interesting, that description. Was it were you able to get any facial features or anything like that from what you remember?
No. I was, the moment the eyes, I hit the face, and I know it was like, you know, boom, boom. You know, like I hit the face and the eyes started get, you know, massive eye shine because it was a pretty powerful flashlight. I was so focused on that. And then, you know, I mean, I felt like I was rooted in place. And then when the hand came up, and I remember the hand more than I do the face, because when the hand came up, I remember it had hair hanging down, and it had, the palm was like a almost black.
Right. Yeah.
And it was like a big mitt. I mean, it was like somebody had some crazy looking, you know, baseball mitt on that. I mean, it was just huge. I just remember it, you know, covering its eyes. And then that's, you know, a bear. There's not a lot of bear in Louisiana, and bears that shield their eyes with their hands are pretty unheard of, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. And did the creature vocalize or anything?
The only thing it did was when it was, we noticed the breathing, and it didn't change. I mean, when we ran down to the base of the hill, I'm sure it wasn't hiding. It was just, I think it was biding its time because there's so much commotion going on that's kind of been the conclusion I came up with. You know, it was passing through, but there's all this commotion going on. Well, let me just hang out here until everything settles down, and then, you know, later on I'll pass through. It was breathing. I felt like it wasn't breathing heavy. It was just such a big animal. It was expelling so much air. It was breathing. It wasn't like winded, you know. It was just expel. It was so big. It had like huge lungs. It's expelling all this air. Like it's breathing in. It's just, you know, these big lungs, and it's breathing out, but it had like a rasp to it, but it didn't like scream at us. It didn't vocalize in any way. In all the years we would, you know, run through woods, I never heard whoops. We never heard wood knocks. I never heard whistling that seemed weird. You know, I mean, we never heard anything like that. And that night, I definitely, we didn't hear anything.
Yeah, the breathing is very strange. I have heard that before, and it's just to how you described. The only one thing I would probably add to it is it reminded me of kind of like a sick animal because of the raspy.
I'd agree with that. It like it had a cold or something.
Yeah, kind of just like a sick animal, like a very large sick animal, but kind of reminded me of a sick animal. As you got older, did you talk with your friend about what happened?
Yeah, well, we kind of never really talked about it. You know, I don't think it was one of those deals where it was like, hey, remember that time? You know, the 4th of July? Yeah, I remember that. And that was it.
Right. Let's go get a beer.
Let's go get a beer. Because yeah. We don't need to go through that again.
Right.
We don't need to discuss it. We lived it. You know, what else is there? I mean, and it wasn't, you know, a very long encounter, to be sure. But it was long enough.
Yeah, and it was one of those encounters that's very up close and personal. Now being an adult, looking back on it, because sometimes it's hard to reflect on it as a kid. But as you get older, I know you've probably, I'm assuming you've replayed this in your mind over and over again. What was your impression of what it was doing?
Like I said, looking back, I feel like it was hanging out. It was just passing through. I don't feel like it was there. But then again, if I look, you know, you're talking about it now, it was there two nights. You know, the folks next door, they had horses and they had a barn on the edge of the wood line that had horse feed. And it was that maple and oats horse feed. I mean, that's, you know, I'm sure would be delicious for these guys to eat. And it's not like they had one of those really cool big red barns. You know, they had a barn that had an open front that you could just walk into and they'd, you know, it was open, you know, it didn't have doors on it. It just was open. So they would store these oats in that barn.
Right. So there was lots of food, easy food.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of food. There's lots of deer. There's natural springs that bubble up out of the ground, you know, around the area. I mean, right near the property, we would, you know, go roaming through the woods and drink out of it ourselves. After that, the only thing about the property was my grandfather or my grandparents, their house was on, it was pier and beam construction, so it had concrete blocks that would hold it off the ground about, you know, 3 feet. It didn't have a concrete slab. It had these concrete blocks and pier and beam construction to hold it up off the ground. Because Louisiana is real moist and, you know, houses would sink. They had a window on the back of the house that was at about 10 feet high. That was about 1x2 window. And that window filled me with such dread at night because I just knew it was going to be standing there looking in at me.
As an adult, looking back on your situation of it coming up on you guys, what do you think what was your impression of what it was doing?
That's tough to say. I mean, I kind of get the feeling it was saying, okay, you know, I could go with the move along, nothing to see here, beat it. I could go with, oh, hi, guys. Here, let me help you with, you know, let me help you out with your spinal column.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's either, okay, so, you know, okay, kids, go home, or, oh, thanks for bringing dinner. You know, I'm not one of those, you know, friendly forest giant types. And, I'm more the, it's a wild animal.
Yeah. It's very interesting how it stopped when you turned around and hit it with the flashlight. Like it was coming. You wonder what would have happened if you didn't have a flashlight or if you guys hadn't turned around and hit it with the flashlight, how far up close would it have come?
Yeah, I that's a very good question. I kind of don't want to know what that might have been, because yeah, you know, definitely hitting it with a flashlight, I think, surprised it. Like what? Like, oh, you know, you can see me now. You know, one of those deals. Yeah, I really don't. I really don't know. I kind of don't want to know what would have happened. Definitely, because it probably wouldn't have been good for me.
Probably one of the most fascinating parts about your story is firing off bottle rockets. Probably every wild animal within 10 miles had probably headed for the hills as soon as you guys were firing off those bottle rockets. But with these things, it doesn't loud bangs, gunfire. Doesn't really seem to shake them up or make them run.
Yeah, that was one thing, you know, that makes, like, people that I've told the story to, you know, that were like, oh man, that, you know, there's no way something would have been there with all that stuff going on. You know, part of me could conceivably think that, you know, hey, it's walking through the woods, it's hanging out, and then it sees like all these booms with big bright flashes and colors, and you know, then there's the part where the kids are running around yelling and screaming and drawing lots of attention to themselves. There were five kids under the age of 15 running around in this area.
Yeah,
you know, my brother, even though he's older than me, he's kind of small in stature. I mean, there's a million reasons, and you know, since neither one of us, like you like to say, are studying one in our basement.
Right.
You know, we can't test it. You know, we can't. What do you think of this big bright flash, sir?
Yeah, and that's the interesting part is that, you know, any other wild animal is going to bolt from the area, and that the fact that this thing didn't run, and it really wasn't, like you said, you turn off the flashlight and it's kind of surprised. I like your description of the hand. You know, every person that I've talked to that has had a really up-close encounter and has seen the hands, they describe them the same way, like oven mitts or like a catcher's mitt, just huge when they see the hands. How did this affect you from seeing this at such a young age and then kind of growing into an adult? How did this affect you?
Well, it's you know, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I was pretty young. I still on occasion have a nightmare. I mean, I'm 46 years old. I'll be 46 this month, and I still, on occasion, will have a nightmare about it. You know, I have a good career. I'm a professional person. I was in the military. You know, so I don't think it adversely affected me. But you know, there is still the stigma, like, you know, telling people, hey, this happened. I actually had a coworker try to use it against me. Because I told him about it, and then he tried to use it against me to make me look like, you know, look what he believes. You know, this guy believes in monsters. You know, at a company party, my boss goes, "Oh, you saw the Lugaroo," and kind of shut him up.
Yeah, I'd like to take that guy out to Texas with me.
Yeah, me too. but he's kind of a douche, so you know.
That's even better.
Necessarily wouldn't. Yeah. Yes. It would. That would be good. It's the whole thing, you know, you tell people, and, you know, for a while it's like, you know, no, seriously, there are these things and they're out there. But did it keep me from, you know, I still go camping. I have a daughter. When she was little, we would do a camp, you know, every summer we'd go camping. It didn't keep me out of the woods forever. It kept me out of the woods for a while. I think mostly it's the believe me factor, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, no, I get that completely. And it's hard, too, when you've experienced something, you're trying to tell the truth, you know, you're trying to really come forward and say, hey, I saw this, and then you get kind of like what your coworker did to you. You get that from a lot of people. I understand it, but it's frustrating in the same sense, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I went to... In the state of Texas, in San Antonio, the Natural History Museum had a Bigfoot, like, exhibit, which I thought was, and this is like 2003. I went to it. I took my wife at the time to it, and she was a big naysayer. You know, oh, I don't believe it. You know, you saw, I don't know what you saw, but, and we walked through this whole exhibit. They had all kinds of artifacts. They had old videos with Krantz and different people. They even had this replica of the Skookum cast. And at the end of the tour, they had a life-size cardboard cutout of a Sasquatch that's on your website with the two Sasquatches and the guy. They had one of those, and it was holding two buckets. And they'd give you a token as you went in. And the bucket was labeled, I believe, you know, I don't believe. So you would drop the coin in the bucket, you know, whichever you chose. And, of course, I put mine in the believe because I certainly have seen. But it's amazing to me, after looking at all that evidence, that the I don't believe bucket was so full.
And that's, you know, and like I've always said, you know, until one's dead on the table, we can talk about all the things we want under the sun, but until one's shot and brought in, you know, and I hate to say I promote shooting one, but I kind of do promote shooting one. I mean, and that sounds very cruel, and I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, but at the end of the day, that's what needs to be done. It has to be, and I think it has to be done once and brought out publicly, and then after that, I don't know about shooting them after that, but it needs to be done once.
Yeah, I am pro kill for the lack, you know, for the purpose of proving. I'm also pro kill in the interest of preserving your life. Definitely. I think that until one is brought in and there's a body on the table that's, you know, not a costume stuff with, you know, deer guts. I mean, an actual specimen. And people will still scoff at it. But they will, you know, say, okay, they exist. And I, you know what though? I think that a lot of people would be like, in this day and age, okay, they exist. Big right. deal. You know, gorillas exist too.
And you're right. That's something that, Mark Zaski brought up. And it didn't really hit me until he was saying that, you know, more people care about what Kim Kardashian is wearing rather than monsters in the woods. And I think you're right. I mean, I really do. I think it would come out. The only downside to that, of it coming out, I think a lot of other questions would come out that someone would have to answer. You know, for example, when you talk to a lot of Native people, or you talk to some researchers, or you talk to people that investigate missing people, a lot of them will tell you kind of the same thing, that these things snag kids,
mm-hmm.
and that they'll snag women and children, and sometimes men. I know down in Oklahoma, some different tribes, they'll talk about these things eating people. And, you know, as I was listening to your encounter, I was thinking about that missing boy. I just posted it up on the blog about the missing toddler in Idaho, how he just vanished.
Yeah.
You know, he's got his grandfather there. He's got his mom and dad there. They're in the middle of nowhere, and he just vanishes. And now they're saying, well, maybe a wild animal got him. Well, even a toddler is going to scream out, is going to cry out bloody murder if a cougar gets him, or, you know, there's going to be a mess somewhere of
right.
these animals, you know, any wild animal getting them, except for Sasquatch. I can pick it up, take off running with it. And I think that goes on, you know, in your situation, why the hell is it walking up on you guys and you guys are shooting off bottle rockets and it isn't until you put the light on it? You know what I mean? It just, it, stuff like that, I think, goes on, and not every situation, but I think in some situations that does go on where people do come up missing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree. I agree with you. I've read the 411 books, and, you know, how you can look at some of the accounts, you know, and especially the older accounts, you know, the Native American accounts. There's a Indian Choctaw reservation in East Texas. And I remember going there as a kid because my dad, you know, took us there. They had a replica of their one of, you know, a settlement, because the Choctaw Nation was considered one of the, I think, the five civilized tribes. They called themselves the five civilized tribes of the Native American culture. They had like 15-foot wooden post, you know, tree walls. It had walls around it, and the entrance was a narrow, you know, a long, skinny, narrow, basically hallway that one person could walk through, and getting a horse through there would be a challenge. If you had a fat horse, he's not getting in there. But I just, you know, looking back, I thought, you know, I think why, you know, well, first of all, didn't know that they actually built fortified installations. And before you know, the white man came. What do you guys control this whole area? What are you fortifying it against?
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, you know, when you talk to a lot of the different tribes, like here in Washington State, and I've talked to some of the Choctaw members down there in Oklahoma, but the ones here in Washington State, when I talked with him...
Yeah, I remember you talking about it on one of the shows.
Yeah, they were just, you know, stay away from Mount St. Helens, stay away from this area because these things are in there. And, you know, it's interesting when you talk to a lot of these tribal members, if you ask them, they'll tell you. Most people say they won't talk to the white man, but I really haven't found that to be the case. Most Native people, if you ask them, they'll tell you why they did certain things in different areas, and they'll tell you a lot of stuff about the creatures on the reservations and stuff they've run into. But you're right. Why are they fortifying it? You know, that whole area was Choctaw area. Why are they fortifying?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The whole subject is, you know, it's fascinating to me, especially, you know, coming from the, you know, like you know.
I've seen it, yeah.
It's not a faith-based, you know, I know they're out there kind of hippie thing. It's, you know, because you've seen. I know because I've seen. Now, what I saw might not be the exact, you know, it might be the southern breed of what roams around Mount St. Helens, you know, or it could be, there could be four types. Who knows? Like has been discussed. Early 1900s, late 1800s, people were more apt to say, oh, yeah, those, yeah, they're these weird, you know, crazy, you know, wild man. You just got to watch out for them. Unlike now, where it's like, no, that's not real.
Yeah, it's become a joke.
Yeah, no, that's not real. Come on. You know, whereas 100 years ago, it's like, oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah, they'd put it on the front page of the paper about the wild man. Another encounter with the wild man.
Yeah, well, the wild man was seen again, you know. You know, yeah, so I think it's kind of interesting. Plus, I don't know, like, do you think, Wes, that if somebody hit one with their car, let's say, that it would just disappear? Or do you think, it's, you know, the local police would be like, oh, hey, everybody, you know, the local news, get the local news down here, look, check out what we, you know, or is this just going to be one of those swept under the rugs thing?
I think it would get, I think that's happened. I really do. I think that's happened probably a few times. And the shooting of them, that's happened a few times.
Oh, yeah.
I've talked to people that have shot them. People that I've actually talked to people that have hit them with their cars or, the, you know, have seen, I had one lady on that, they were describing this wrecked truck and several state troopers there and what looked like a gorilla laying on the side of the road. So I think that has already happened several times over. I think it gets swept under the rug. You know, one of the other things I posted on the blog, I think it was last week, it was the Pennsylvania 911 call. Where the guy said he shot one. Cops they're laughing. And what's interesting about that case, because I think this guy actually shot a bear. But what's interesting about that case is he said, I have a body. All the radio chatter stopped on the police chatter. All of it stopped on the radio. Then there was a helicopter, a military helicopter, immediately flew out to the area and was scanning, basically mowing the, I guess what they call mow, you know, when you go back and forth, back, just mowing the area.
Yeah, search pattern.
He said, just complete search pattern. Now, why are they sending a military helicopter? Why is that immediately sent out to the area where this guy says he shot a Bigfoot? You know, when he's saying, hey, I shot it, it's a big joke. They're laughing about it. How much has this guy been drinking? You can hear the cops snicker back and forth. And then he says, I have the body. Everything gets really serious really quick. So I think it has happened, and I think it would get swept under the rug. You'd have to be kind of tricky on how you brought one in.
Oh yeah, the guy on the lead in to the show, who, you know, calls 911 because he has a prowler, and then it steps into the light and he can see it, and he's like, holy, you know, get somebody out here, you know, and you can tell the old guy fights to keep his composure, and the 911 operator is like, what's going on now? He goes, you know, he's describing what he's looking at, and you know, you read the story online, and he doesn't want to say there's a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch outside my house and I'm looking at it, it's a big person.
Right.
Supposedly the cops responded to that. They actually came out. There was a officer who responded to that. You know, you don't get the rest of the, well, what happened? You know, what did the cop see? Did he show, you know, when he showed up, what did he do? What did he, you know, I mean, we've had, you know, on your show, you've had the law enforcement guys that are like, yeah, you know, with the old couple, you know, they tried to grab me off the porch.
The 911 call with that guy, I know Ron Moorhead knows him, and the guy really wants nothing to do with Bigfoot, wants nothing to do with this topic. And he did see a Sasquatch, but he didn't want to come out and say, I saw a Sasquatch, because he didn't think the cops would come out to help him. You know, so it's a fascinating topic. It'll be nice when this comes out and we'll all be vindicated. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Brian, and sharing your encounter, and I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Wes. I think you're doing a great thing. You know, it's kind of like Sasquatch Anonymous. Hi, I'm Brian, and I had a Sasquatch encounter.
Yeah.
You know, it's therapeutic for a lot of people, and the fact that, you know, it's not a clown show. You don't approach it. You approach it very seriously. You know, it's fun. You know, your show's fun. It's entertaining, but it gives people a chance to get it off their chests in for lack of a better word, safe place, because they know you're not going to be like, yeah, well, unless they come on and say, you know, well, I mind spoke with the thing before it, you know, interdimensionally jumped to, you know, Alpha Centauri. But
yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, that's even, well, I had a little fun with Ray the Spaceman, but
that was great.
Even some of those stranger encounters, I've been wondering about. There's one I was thinking about having on. The guy has a very, very interesting video, but I honestly think what he is experiencing is something more on the demonic side.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like to hear that, but what other wild animal can talk to you, through telepathy? The answer is none. Okay, well, what people can talk to you through telepathy? The answer is none. Well, what other entity that you've heard about can talk to you via telepathy? And in a lot of poltergeist encounters, a lot of demonic encounters, you'll hear that sort of behavior. I really think a lot of these people are experiencing something, but I don't think it's Sasquatch related.
Yeah. Just one quick thing. My daughter, she's in her 20s, early 20s, and she works was working as a sitter for the hospital for terminally ill patients. And just to make sure they don't get up and wander off. And she's seen people start talking to Jesus, like they're having a conversation. I mean, there's no one in the room, and there, you know, there was a lady, yes, yes, Jesus, thank you, you know, can tell my mama I'll be there soon. And the next day, she's screaming at the devil, get out of here, devil, I don't want to talk to you. I mean, like you're having an argument with someone in the room, and there's no one there. And, you know, the first time she saw it was kind of unnerving, and she talked to one of the nurses, and they said, oh, yeah, well, you know, I hate it when they start doing that because it means they're going to die soon.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the nurse. And so she didn't work that job very long.
I don't blame her.
Because it was a little disconcerting, to be sure. But, I you know, like we had discussed before, I'm sure there are many, many things in reality that we are not aware of.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure there is.
And Sasquatch just happens to be one that not everybody's aware of, but it's a flesh and blood creature. You know, it's a damn dirty ape, like you say.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of grabby at times, you know, especially to young people. So I would prefer it to stay on its side of the fence, so to speak.
Right. Well, thanks again, Brian. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Wes. I appreciate it too, man. You're doing a great job.
And that's it for tonight, everyone. If you get a chance, please visit SasquatchChronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me, Wes@SasquatchChronicles.com. Until next time, everyone, have a great weekend.